Hello, welcome into this Edge session where we'll talk about the browser itself, obviously, but about extension and security on the web also. So I am David. I'm working as a senior SD with Microsoft Corp now. I was Microsoft Friends before. You can join me on Twitter at Dave Roos. And Etienne?
And I'm Etienne. I'm a senior SD in Microsoft Corp too, and you can talk with me on Twitter using at M-E-L-T-A.
Okay, so we're glad to meet you. The web platform will be the first part of the session. Then we'll talk about security with FIDO. So we will see together what FIDO is and how to use Windows Hello on the website. And we'll end up seeing how to build some extensions on Edge, but in all browser in general manner.
Mm-hmm.
So first, we need to talk about why we decided to build a brand new engine for Microsoft Edge. But for that, we need to understand a bit of history. So for the youngest of you, maybe you can't remember, but I was an awesome brother by that time. But it was starting to be a bit old, but it was using the Trident rendering engine, and it starts to move to, well, we'll see why we had some trouble in the past using Trident in the very last years. Chrome is using Blink for the web platform part. Safari using WebKit, so Chrome was using WebKit and now is using Blink. It's a fork of that. Firefox is using Gecko, and Opera is using Blink also. So I was talking about previous years, so Trident is a bit old. It started in 1995, so maybe some of you were even not born yet, I don't know. And by IE6, we decided to introduce a doc type tag to help the engine to switch between two modes. That was a quirks mode and a strict mode, to be able to, because before that we had some quirks in the code and that wasn't really following the standards, and we decided to introduce a strict mode to follow the standard. But then we have to be able to be compatible with the existing website, we had to ask to IE to switch to one or not to another mode.
So basically, we had two engines, or pretty much like
it was the same engine, but two way of
rendering,
and we're asking the engine to. It's where the complexity really starts, and then IE8, for instance, introduced three different modes, like the quirks mode or the IE5 mode, then the IE7 compatibility view and the standard mode of IE8. So now freeware to render stuff using the same engine. And then we add IE9, which introduced HTML5 support, then IE10, and plus quirks mode emulation. And finally, IE11. So it started to become a real nightmare for us to maintain.
Different
branch of code.
And if you have a bug somewhere, maybe you have to fix it in IE5, in the IE5 rendering, in the IE7, in the... So sometimes engineers had to fix in pretty different code base the bug that they found. So it was really a nightmare.
Yes, and the problem for us, we are spending more time fixing bugs in the different version of the engine rather than spending time on new features.
Mm-hmm.
So in the meantime, what happened? So Chrome, Firefox, Opera, and Safari were evergreen, meaning that they were updated very frequently. They did not have this way of having different way of rendering engine. So they had a unique way of rendering stuff. So sometimes they had bugs, obviously, like anybody building some code, but they were able to fix it fairly quickly because they have a unique engine to support.
But the idea behind having all the rendering engine and ways in IE was not all bad, because the idea was for any companies that have created a website, they don't want to upgrade their codes and it still works. That was good for this, but
obviously for compatibility reason, it was really useful. But then, well, we started to move from old code base to a new way of coding with mm-hmm. HTML5. And the idea was we need to play the same game, and we can see that recent development was using standard in a much better way. So we need to update also our way of shipping code.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why Microsoft came with Windows 10, and it became also evergreen using the Edge HTML engine. And we're going to see what we have thanks to that. First of all, interoperability, there were a lot of interop fixes since IE 11. So the idea of interoperability is really when you're coding using Chrome, for instance, on your website, and as long as you're using a standard way of coding, so you're not using stuff specific to Chrome using specific prefixes. Well, the idea was to be sure that the same standard were interpreted in the same way in Microsoft Edge and Chrome. And we've seen a lot of good fixes inside Edge compared to IE11. So for instance, you can see that our roadmap to interoperability is really interesting because thanks to the new way of coding with an evergreen browser, we've managed to implement a lot of new features month by month. And you can see that we're currently in the Edge HTML 14, mm-hmm. using the latest Windows 10 build. And you can see that the development features in preview 1 that we shipped were much higher than what we used to have with Internet Explorer. On the HTML5 test score, so which doesn't mean really something particular if you're coding, but still is interesting. It's a kind of benchmark, which doesn't mean that if you don't have the higher score, it's really bad. It's just to give you an idea of the level of support of each browser. So from IE to current Edge, as you can see the progresses we've made. Chrome is currently leading this game, but we can see that Firefox and Edge are more or less on the same level. Even Safari and Safari 10 provided much more features. So currently this means that the latest browser are really great and implement a lot of cool stuff, stable stuff that you can play with, and we don't have any more the problem we had in the past with the various version of IE being available. When you start developing today, you must pay attention to previous bad development habits maybe you had.
Yes, because first, the user agent string was created by Mozilla to have statistics of the browser usage. That was the first main objective of this. And more and more, it's been used by developers, web developers, in a bad way. Like to say, OK, I know that Firefox is able to have this feature, but let's say Chrome doesn't have this feature. So I'm going to test. If it's Firefox, then I'm going to do this. If it's Chrome, I'm going to do this. And so it's been a nightmare for browser creators, developers, and also for web developers, because when someone in his code is testing that, OK, if it's Mozilla, then I can do that, and then it doesn't change his code, so it's continued to not work in like Chrome browser. So that's why Chrome added Mozilla, and also that's why he added Apple WebKit and everything. And so the user agent string, which was in the first purpose was to identify your browser correctly, ended up like this. It's really a mess.
Yes, the idea is really to act like the audit, because like you said at the beginning, there was Mozilla. Then Safari decided to copy part of the strings, and Chrome arrived also. And for instance, on Android, if you want to have the content served normally for iPhones, they act like being Apple WebKit. And at the end, we've done the same. Just doing that, we've been able to fix a lot of interrupt problem because people were sniffing IE to provide some bad content because they didn't check that IE have made some progresses or Edge have made some progresses. So they weren't updating the code like you've just said. And just by doing that, we were able to make things working. So the new way of playing with experimental features rather than trying to detect the browser version is to enable flags, something that's been started with Firefox and Chrome. And we have the same thing now in Microsoft Edge. So if you type enable flags in the address bar, you can now enable some JavaScript experimental stuff, which is really useful that rather than putting some prefixes in the code, that sometimes also leads to problem because sometimes people were using, for instance, WebKit prefixes, but when Firefox and Microsoft were implementing them, they forgot to use the MS prefixes or the MOS prefixes. So the idea now is rather than putting experimental features using prefixes, we rather like to put that by enabling the features inside the browser itself using the enable flags and doing some feature detection code on the JavaScript side. So there are a lot of different HTML5 features currently available. This is just a reference slide if you want to have a look. But in a general manner, if you like to check what Microsoft Edge is currently implementing, or what we are supporting, or what we're currently looking at, you just need to go on this specific address, and you can type for the features. For instance, let's say that you want to check if we are supporting SVG. You can type for SVG, for WebRTC, whatever. You'll be able to check the at which number we started to implement it, or if we're currently in development process. So let's have a look to what's new in Microsoft Edge HTML, which is, I hope you understood, the new rendering engine of Microsoft Edge. So first of all, we've been some interesting progresses recently in the last build around accessibility and inclusive design, which is something really important on the web. And I really like the picture on the slide. For instance, let's talk about the touch one. And I know some friends of us are currently in the same situation. So let's imagine, for instance, you only have one arm. It's really useful if you want to go on the website to use the touch capacities of your screen or your mobile to do that. But it could be the same case when you've got some injury on your arm, or if you're a new parent, if you got your baby in your arm, you just have one hand available. So the idea is to say to people that accessibility is not about people having some kind of disabilities, but also it could be useful for anyone in his life. So it's really important to have that. We've been some also interesting progresses. So we've done a lot of accessibility features in the browser itself, but sometimes it's not really easy to check what's going on for a screen reader, because most of the developers are not blind or don't have any kind of disability around, for instance, visual impairment. So they're not used to check their code like a screen reader would do. So what we've been doing inside the F12 part is putting a new tool, which is the accessibility tree, and I'm going to give you a small demo of that on Edge using the Babylon.js website, for instance. So you can see that this is a web page with a lot of different pictures, images, with some different boxes. And if I'm launching the narrator, for instance, it will go through this different stuff. Or if using NVDA, which is an open source of free screen reader, it could go through the different elements. But while I'm developing, maybe it could be useful to just check the current tree by going in the DOM Explorer part. And you see that I've got this button, which is the accessibility tree. And I will have a kind of preview on how the screen reader will go through my web page. So we will see the banner over there. It will see a couple of links, which are the try links, download link, and GitHub links. Then it will see that there is a navigation part. So we're using HTML5 semantic tags. Then the main part, where we've got the main region, which is the main demo part of our website. Article with some links, and you will see that there are some images with some text inside it. So you will be able to go through that. So if you've done some mistake, for instance, while you've been coding a website, if you forgot to put an alt element on the image, you will quickly be able to see that inside the tool itself. So it's really useful, and it's really quick to test.
And that's awesome, because in the past, being able to know where you made mistake, it was really hard. You had to try with different accessibility tools and just see if it worked, and just know that in this case it doesn't work, in this one it works. And here you can see really what you do. So that's great.
Thank you. But I haven't built it, but I think also it's great. On another part, it could be useful for accessibility also. It's speech synthesis, which is complex for French guys to pronounce. And it's directly in your JavaScript code. What you can do is to call to this API to be able to generate from text to speech stuff. So it's based on the current install language on your Windows machine for Microsoft Edge. You could have the voice selection then. Through the volume, the rate, and you could even use also SSML, which is speech synthesis markup language, being also used by other API like the Bing Speech API, and it's fairly easy to use. And we're going to switch it to a demo. So we are currently inside the Edge, and this is a small web page where you can type some texts and like, hello, my name is Etienne.
That's not true.
Yes, well, you cannot check if it's true or not, just want to speak. And if I'm pressing the speak button, you can see that currently you should hear something, and I can even change the voice.
Hello, my name is Etienne.
And it will support also different languages. Currently, I don't have the French language pack installed on my machine, which could sound stupid, but it's currently the case.
You can put a comma also, and so it's going to change the...
Yes, to make a small pose. Hello, my name. Happy to be there.
Not robotic.
Hello, my name is Etienne. I'm happy
not
to be there.
Too much robotic voice using that. So you can use that in pretty much.
And modify the rate. So I was currently having a rate of 2, so it should be slower currently. So it's fairly simple to use, and it's embedded in a lot of different browsers. It's in Microsoft Edge, in Firefox, and Chrome. And you could imagine that in games, for instance. So let's switch to an accessible game I've been building. So this is a game I've been building to let people being blind or visually impaired to be able to play to a breakout game. So for that, I've been using Web Audio to have 3D specialization to let you knowing where the ball is it on the left or on the right, and based also on the speed of the music, and to give you some information if you are far away from the ball to move from left or right, so to be able to play without seeing the screen. And plus that, I've been using the speech API. So if I'm going to, so let's close that, to the code itself and trying to review the JavaScript part, you can see that I'm using over there some code, so it's really simple to use, as you can see. You just need to check if the API is available using feature detection before calling it. Then you need to put the text part and ask to the browser to speak it for you. And once being done that, you can start the game, and you can hear that there is a number of blocks to finish to target. And you can see that the ball, based on this position, will change the sounds. And at the end, I know that I've lost because the browser told me using the speech API. So in game, rather than, so I think it's a cool experience to try to build an accessible game for people using that. But in a general manner, in classical game, it could be useful as you've got support for languages to just add some strings and localized strings, and to use this API to generate like an adventure game or point and click to have some feedbacks. So it depends on the quality of the voice, but it could be enough, rather than if you've got small budget, maybe you don't want to record all the voice yourself. So you could use this kind of technologies.
And looking at the design, you had small budget, right?
Yeah. Yes, thank you, Etienne.
You're welcome.
So on the feature level, we're currently starting to implement Service Worker inside Edge, and the first step is to have a fetch API. So the idea is to really have be able to do some request, network requests that are promise based. You can see the dot then part of it, meaning that you can release in some new way of programming that could be implemented using the new version of Ecomax script. So it's the first step being supported by Edge. We've got the beacon also API. Beacon could be useful at it's named Fire and Forget. For instance, let's imagine that you are in your website, you're about to switch to another website or switch to another part of your website, and you want to have some kind of telemetry or detail of about what the user have done on the web page before leaving the website. Before that, there were some hacks and tricks that was doing some XHR requests to the web server trying to block, you know, the navigation to send the information, and it was not really nice. So the idea of beacon is really to send some a little bunch of data to the server in a fire and forget way that's going to be handled by the browser, meaning that you're going just before leaving the website, when you will have time, please send this data to the web server for telemetry. So it's named beacon.
And you're also able to get notification. So that's one of the step that you get from browser and from JavaScript, and you don't have to create an application for that. You have that like out of the box from the browser, and it's making you able to go inside the device in which you're currently running and pop up a notification. If you, and I think you had to see a video where you have web notification, you can see that, for instance, if you tried the web version of Skype, you can see there is a pop-up that is going when someone is talking to you.
Of if using Facebook also?
Yes, for
Facebook
instance.
is using a web notification also.
So that's really a feature that is reducing the gap between the web and the apps on devices. So it's really, really cool.
And as you can see in the code, very simple to implement also. You were talking about Skype. Currently, Skype is using ORTC, which is also known as WebRTC 1.1. So Edge is currently only browser supporting that. So to be able to interact with other browsers like Chrome or Firefox, we're going to ship also support for WebRTC 1.0 in the next version of Edge HTML, which implies also that we will have to support more codec like VP8 to be able to provide a seamless experience with other browser. So now let's switch to more JavaScript parts. So ECMAScript 6, also known as ECMAScript 2015, Edge was last year the leading browser, so we're happy that all the competitors managed to play the same games as us, and now a lot of different browsers support ECMAScript 6 in a almost complete version. You can see that Safari, it was in March, update the browser in iOS 10, and now they've got full support, so 100% support of ECMAScript 6, which means that really, you can really put some code in production as long as the browser is fairly recent.
Yes, the idea here is not to show, okay, we were ahead of everyone else in March 15. The idea is what you just like to say, as a web developer, you can use these features because if someone is using a pretty new browser and it doesn't depend on which kind of browser, it's going to work correctly. So that's really cool.
And if not, you can use stuff like Babel or TypeScript to compile back to ES5. So the beauty of Edge is it's available across all Windows platforms. So which means that all the cool features we've got in Edge, like pointer events, game path support, WebGL, WebAudio, all the stuff are available from IoT when it makes sense, or from holographic platforms to PC, mobile, Xbox, and Surface Hub. And to give you a demonstration of that, we're going to show you almost native-like experience running on the desktop, running on the Xbox One, and running also on my Windows Mobile. So let's switch on the demo for that. So now we're going to see together how to use the Edge engine technology in different cases. So the first one will be the desktop browser, like you usually using. And this is a WebGL experience, so I can move inside this 3D scene using my mouse, fingers, or even the gamepad being supported by the browser. We've got a really smooth experience in full screen if we like to. And being full screen, well, you couldn't imagine this is something using HTML5, I guess, or JavaScript, so you get a nice experience. And it's using WebAudio, it's doing a different of cool stuff, including IndexedDB to store the assets for an offline experience, which means that we're really, really close to a native-like experience. And it's also work on other platforms where you've got Edge. So, for instance, if I'm switching to my Windows Phone, I've got the really same experience. I can start over the beginning, and you see that the frame rate is still good, and the experience works fine because we're using responsive design again, and I can move inside the thing using my finger. And the last platform to support then is the Xbox. So you've been doing a nice videos of that because we don't have the Xbox here today with us in the room, but we can see that this is the very same experience you can see currently in this video. And if we're switching back, you can see where you're currently running inside your Xbox One dashboard, and you can even move inside the scene using the gamepad if you like to. So HTML5 and Edge help you to build some experience across all Windows platforms. But what if you like to go even a step further? So maybe you like to embed this website inside an application mm-hmm. that you'd like to push to the store. So for which reason, you would maybe going to ask me. The first one is maybe you like to have some in-app purchases, or just you want to be available in the store to sell your application rather than putting on the website. But also, if I'm pressing F5, you're going to see that we have other features being available that once you are inside the Windows platform using the UWP parts, you can even call APIs of the platforms using WinRTs, and we're going to see what I've been doing in these demos. So as this is responsive, web is by nature responsive if you're doing some correct job. So it's very easy to embed that inside a universal application supporting all kind of resolution and devices. And if I'm switching to this part, what you can see, but if Etienne is switching our faces, maybe you can see I'm currently moving my hand because I've got a Microsoft band. And if you switch back to the screen, you can see that I'm currently doing a Jedi trick. So I'm currently moving the camera using the force, which are the force of my arm. And I'm going to show you in the code how I've done that. I've just built a small WinRT component in C# to call the band SDK for that. And I'm going to export that on the website. I'm just going to do a feature detection over there, trying to test for Windows.something like we're usually doing in feature detection. But then I'm running inside a Windows 10 application. This namespace will be filled by my component, so I can call it. And then what I will do is simply have access to the accelerometer data of my band to move the camera. So just to give you an idea of how to use Edge across all platforms, including the UWP parts, to extend the logic of your app if you need to.
So now we're going to talk about really new way of being able to identify and authorize user on a website. And that's using strong credentials and Windows Allow. And we're going to start with a demo before explaining to you how it works. So here, I am on a website. And you can see that I can sign in here. And while I'm doing this, it's going to ask me, OK, do you want to use Windows Allow? Because I detected that you are using Windows, you're on Edge, and you can use that. And you have a feature activated, because here I am on a Surface Book, so I have the Windows Allow detector. And if I click on the Start Using Windows Allow, and I look at the webcam, it's going to identify me, so it confirms that I'm Etienne.
Okay, great.
Yes, thank you. And then I can click on OK, and it's going to create the authentication and then make me able to connect inside the website. And if I sign out here or log out, I can use that again, and it's going to use the same credential and everything.
So rather than identifying yourself on the website using your email address and password, it's fairly easy now. You just use your face, and it will be really straightforward, and you will be identified on the website. But the question is
why would you do that?
Yeah, is it more secure or not?
Yes, and so so this is the most common
password being
used password
by people, and maybe your mother or some of your friends. I hope you're not part of those people, but the most common password is 123456. Six.
The second one is password, which is pretty.
And there is a new one, which is 123456789, because I guess the websites are asking for at least 8 characters.
Well, 9, you can see that on the 6th version. So this is really easy to guess.
Yes.
To try. So if you want to log in on someone else's password, you can just try one of these and maybe it works. I don't know, but we never said that. and so in a traditional logging or logon way of doing stuff. So you're on your app or you're on your website and you're saying, I want to log in using that username, or that could be a username or a mail address like here with a password, which is a strong one, like the one you see here. It's going to send that to the server, and then you will be able to authenticate. So that's fairly secure, and not really secure, because there is a lot of different ways a hacker can get your password. The first one is by installing a keylogger on your computer. The second one is by using phishing or password guessing, just going through the...
This
the
one is easy to guess, for
yes,
instance.
Yes, this one is really easy to guess. So you can try the first one, or no, that's the third one, and then you're good to go. Or there is a lot of stolen databases in the web, so people can just go there and try the different password and have your password already available.
That's why we currently have a great initiative being handled by the W3C, which is FIDO for Fast Identity Online. And the idea is really to try to improve that by creating some strong credential. And we're going to see just after that how it's working with a cool animation. And just to let you know that Microsoft is part of this specification, of course, with Google and Mozilla. So let's understand how it's working.
Here is how it's working with Windows Hello. So you have your computer or your tablet or whatever, and you have the website you want to authenticate or the service. So you will send your identity using Windows Hello, and then the website is going to create a credential. And this credential is going to use Windows Hello to recognize you.
Or biometric stuff.
You can use like your
finger.
Key, yes, and everything like this. And then it's going to, that's pretty traditional way of using private and public key. You're going to store the private key on your computer. So
in a secure place, like the TPM, yeah?
Yes, and normally no one can access that. And the public key is going to go wherever you want to be authenticated, so here on the website.
Which is not a problem, because public key are made to be public, so it's not any problem if someone catches the key.
That's the purpose of it. So, and when you want to authenticate, the
web server
is going to send you an assertion with a challenge, and then you're going to use your biometric authentication and the key to create the response for this assertion. And that's going to certify the server that you're correctly, that you're you, and that you can access the service.
So it's much more secure than just sending the password over, even using HTTPS, because as you said, it's fairly easy to guess. And this way, we are sure that you are who you are, because it's using some strong mechanism of security mechanisms. Mm-hmm. So currently it's just implemented in Edge. The only browser supporting that is Edge, using some prefix version, using MS. It's an early implementation. The spec is currently moving, so we will update Edge based on the specification. So it's only available on Windows 10 because it's in Edge and tightly integrated in Windows Hello. But we will have some updates to the spec like later on. For the code,
yes, that's pretty easy. You have here is the first function here that you can see is the one that is going to create the first init of everything, and you're going to send all your user information.
And then you've got the promise when promise when it's finished.
When
and
it's finished, you can get the key, store the public key, and everything. So that's from the server side, right, or the website. And then you can say, my user wants to authenticate, and call the get assertion function. And then you also have a promise, and you can compare that using the API that is provided to you.
So it's funny to see that the code is fairly simple to implement compared to because usually security stuff could be a nightmare to implement as a developer. And but this specification is fairly easy to implement. So what's coming next is it has to become a final standard. So we're still working on that. And it will add some new authenticators. So currently we've show you a demonstration using Windows Hello, which was a face of Etienne. It could be also a pin code or a finger. But in the future, they are currently working on adding USB stuff like smart card reader or Bluetooth to use, for instance, like your phones if you want to authenticate on the website. If you got a phone on you, it will be strong enough to secure the connection. So let's finish by talking about extensions. So extension today is really based on traditional web technologies, which are JavaScript, HTML, CSS, and JSON. So this is the end of the era where we had some BSOs, ActiveX, and yes. Well, native-like stuff.
Flash.
Flash, yes. So Microsoft is now a part of this initiative also. We have a browser extension group working on that. So the idea is to build some kind of standardized manifest and APIs to be able to fairly easily take an extension and make it work on old browsers. So it could be Edge, Firefox, and Chrome. So you've got everybody that you used to know inside this group. And let's have a quick review of an extension. So first, you've got the manifest file. So we're currently working on making it standard, but it's Chrome really that started to create this JSON file. It's, well, fairly easy to understand. You will put the name, the version, and some description of the manifest. And then you will have some different pages defined inside that and permissions. One of them could be the background page. And the background page will, as the name says, run in background. And it could communicate then with another part of the extension that could run inside the content script part. So the content script really live inside the web page itself. So thanks to that, you've got access to the DOM, so the various DOM elements. So we all know that, for instance, when you're working with, I don't know, web worker, you don't have access to DOM because it's working on a separate thread. This is the same on an extension. You will have two parts. You will have the content script living inside the web page itself, having access to the DOM. And you will have other parts of the extension, like the UI page parts. Well, it's like an iframe that's living on top of the rest of the website. And to be able to have access to the different parts of the pages, you need to have a sort of communication mechanism. For that, you will have then a first part will be the parent extension. If they want to have access to your web page, they need to communicate with the content script via messages. And this is a common pattern you will have in web. So they will exchange messages using JSONs, for instance, or, well, you could use whatever you like that's mm-hmm. compatible with JavaScript. Most of the time, people always exchange JSON messages. So on Microsoft Edge, you can have a look to which API we currently support in Microsoft Edge. It's going to be updated in the next version of Edge. We have some documentation public on that. And we are already supporting a large subset of what Chrome is supporting. So it means that it's fairly easy to take a Chrome extension and make it compatible for Edge. And we're going to see that together through a small demo. So we're going to see a small extension I've been working on. The idea is to try to provide some kind of accessibility help on some web pages, and we're going to see that together. So first, let's have a look to the manifest file. So like we just said before, it's a classic JSON file that is fairly documented, so it's fairly easy to create. Well, you have the name of the extension, some description, the author, some icons, and also some content script. And so in my case, what I like to inject inside the web pages is this specific JavaScript file being defined there. So I'm currently using TypeScript, but you could use whatever you like. And this part is interesting. It says that by default, when you're building extension for Chrome, you're using windows.chrome.something. So it could be chrome.runtime.onMessage, for instance. In our case, for Edge, we're using MS Browser. Mm-hmm. And in the future, what we'd like to have using this W3C group is to define a browser, just namespace, that everybody will implement. So in the meantime, we're just using the power of JavaScript and the dynamic parts to just define the browser the future browser version by rather testing if it's already defined or if it's inside MS Browser or Chrome.
That's feature detection.
That's feature detection, yes. And it enables then to have this code being generic enough because we are on the edge side using msbrowser.runtime and Chrome is doing chrome.runtime. So this code is now generic. And what I'm doing on the client side, I'm waiting for a message from the UI parts. And this message, I will have a function handling that. I'm just testing that I am having a specific command requesting the images. And what I will do, I will just iterate through the current web page testing for the various images available in my page. I'm going just to filter them. Just it needs to be strong and big enough to be sent back to the UI. And I'm going to send back the response in JSON. In the UI part, I'm then waiting for that. And what I will do, I will generate the message using the send message function. And I will wait for the feedback. So you see that I'm using the arrow function, which is ES6. And because as we're running inside Edge or Chrome, we know that the browser is supporting some fairly recent JavaScript. So we don't have to worry about compatibility. It's available by default. And I'm going to pass the enter and generate a list of images out of that. And once I will have this list, what I would like to do is to use some computer vision stuff to ask to the cloud using some kind of AI algorithm to please analyze this picture, send me back the answer, and then I will try to either use the speech API we've seen together to tell to the user what's the image, or to use the Bing Bing speech API on the cloud to have a much better voices available. So let's see that in action. So if I'm clicking on this button, this is exactly doing what I've just told you, which is I'm going to send a message to the page itself, currently which is babylonjs.com, which provide me back the image, well, the URL of the image that I've bind inside a collection using just Flexbox, we don't really care. And I can then ask to use a Bing Speech API if I like to. And if I'm pressing, for instance, on this specific element, is going to try to guess what this picture is currently is. So it should say that it's a red motorcycle or something like that. So it's just to provide you a kind of idea how to fairly easily build some extension using JavaScript. And to load it, you just need to go over extension and just before to enable in the able flags part, you need to enable extension developer features. So enable that, restart the browser. And when you've done that, you will be able to go to extension. Normally, the only way to get extension is through the stores. But while developing it, of course, you can then load extension and go to a specific directory to load your code that will then read the manifest and load the extension for you. The debugging process is using F12, so it's fairly classical web development. So if your web developer is very easy to build an extension for Edge, Chrome, or Firefox now, because we are using the very same API. So the main takeaways of this session is that we now have modern extension frameworks based on JavaScript and HTML. We are part from this group, WC3 group. We've got the roadmap if you're interested in that. The extension will be distributed by using the Windows Store. So currently, it's based on the whitelist. So if you're interested in that, you can register and say to the Microsoft Edge team you're interested in pushing a specific extension. So using this specific address.
And what is really good is that if you already created one for Chrome or Firefox, you can ports that really easily to Edge.
Yeah, we even have a tool trying to help you that you'll find somewhere online. But as you see, it's really the same code most of the time, except if you're using some fairly advanced API not yet supported. Most of the time, it will be very easy to migrate. If we're looking forward on what we're currently working on, so there is a service worker. A lot of people are writing that. That will enable to have a very powerful cache mechanism using kind of proxy, a worker acting as a proxy. We'll have also some push notification available. We also currently investigating time on how to implement the shadow DOM, custom element, web payments, really. Mm-hmm. And finally, web assembly, which is really a way to improve the performance of JavaScript, and that started with ASMGS, so compiling code from C++ to JavaScript. But web assembly is really going a step further with using binary serialization and really a way to describe the code that will make it a bit faster than what we had with ASMGS. So the future is really great, and we will really almost or at least maybe even reach the native application thanks to all these technologies. If you want to connect with the Microsoft Edge team, here are the different details you need to know. You can ping them on Twitter. And that's it. I hope you'll find a lot of interesting and detailed information in this session. And we're also available, both of us are available on Twitter. So
if
myself.
Any question, just.
Yes, Davrous, Davrous, and yourself.
EMEULTA.
Yes, and thank you for watching.
Thank you.